All right, it is indeed. Just heard the captain there. It's time for the Global Threat Report, sponsored by Global Threat Solution, the captain's company. 100% veteran-owned, Long Island-based security and investigations firm, offering so many services. Also, a fully licensed private investigations firm and offers comprehensive private investigations. To find out more for peace of mind in uncertain times, go to the site, globalthreatsolutions.com. Or you can make a phone call and get some questions answered at 646-946-6649 as we bring in Captain Ken Bombay. So, Cap, great having you here on a Monday.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it all. There's so much going on. Ceasefire deal on the table. We'll get into that in a sec with the Middle East and Israel and Hamas. Also, the former president. As far as the next chess move could be in play today regarding the $464 million bond that he has to put up. We'll get a sense of that. First of all, let's start with what happened just days ago over in Moscow, Captain, with a terrorist attack claiming the lives of many. And ISIS right at the center of it all. Yeah, ISIS has reared its ugly head once again, this time in Russia. 137 dead, 3 children, and they have claimed responsibility for the massacre. 4 are in custody. Cap, what happened here?
Yeah, so, you know, Jay, in addition to this being a brutal attack, obviously, against the Russian people, this is a pretty complex international security issue right now. First thing I'll address is ISIS-K has reared its ugly head again in what was this devastating attack against the Russian civilians at this concert. They even recorded and published a video that's brutal and includes them slitting a man's throat. And the last time most Americans, Jay, have heard about ISIS-K, unfortunately, was during the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan when 13 U.S. soldiers were killed by Abigail. And that attack that was launched. And a lot of people would say, well, you know, who is ISIS-K? And, you know, a lot of people who don't really follow it closely, they'd say, I thought we beat ISIS. Why are they still around? Well, ISIS formed a lot of affiliates, regional affiliates, when they were thriving at that time. And it allows them to have a decentralized, like, leadership structure. And ISIS-K is one of those groups that they sort of accepted the loyalty of this new branch. And ISIS-K, the K standing for the Khorasan region, which is basically an area in the Middle East specifically that refers to as the Khorasan. So now they got this ISIS-K group. And what's really alarming about it, Jay, is this group specifically has been battling with a lot of these terror groups. Fight with each other, for they compete for dominance. And they've been fighting specifically with the Taliban since 2017 in eastern Afghanistan. But the reason they fight with them is they don't think the Taliban is hard enough and strict enough with enforcing Islamic law. So this group is even more violent, and they also do not respect international borders, as we just recently saw in Russia. So this is a deadly group, and, you know, if we look at the one thing that's scary to Americans right now, having seen this, is going to be that, you know, how many are here now? Okay, we have this southern border that's completely open. We know in the last 3 years, we've had 400 people stopped who are known terrorists. Now, logic and statistics would dictate that if we've stopped 400, a record number over the last 3 years, that the number that got through without us catching them is also a record number. So that in itself is pretty scary. But I think at this time, what should be going on is there's a few more complexities we have to face here, Jay. One of them is that Putin's trying to use this to blame Ukraine. So that you're seeing other countries, allies, Ukraine, the U.S., and some other countries coming out and saying that's not the case. They had nothing to do with this. Our intelligence does not indicate that. Because, you know, Russia's famous for these false flag operations where they're going to try and blame Ukraine, use it as a reason to escalate this conflict. Then we have a little more complexity because Russia, sort of in retaliation, launched this very robust missile attack on Ukraine, and one of their missiles for 39 seconds flew through Polish airspace. So that adds a complexity to this because, you know, it's really a very dangerous, precarious situation now that could launch into escalate this conflict in the region right now because of this attack. I think as far as the international community goes, we just need to, at this time, it would be ideally form an international force that would start to target ISIS-K right now after following this deadly attack and go to where they are, target their leadership, and try and destroy them. That's what should be happening right now if we could get people to focus.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, kind of wonder, okay, they're going to Russia now. And, you know, you had a sense that America is hated so much. You think people would maybe fear the Vladimir Putin regime, Captain, which is not the case with ISIS-K, as you point out here. That's what's going on right now. They are trying to kind of resurrect themselves. And, you know, you go back to what Chris Murray, the FBI director, has been testifying about, that he's very worried right now. And after this type of incident, with all that we have let in into the United States over the last couple of years, my goodness, everybody on high alert without question should be in play here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that the U.S. right now, it's a hard time for us to do this right now, but I think we need to, obviously everyone needs to be showing support for Russia right now, which is, again, not an easy time to do that with what's
hard to believe.
For a long time now.
That's an excellent point.
Like this can be something that can be a bridge right now, Jay, you know, hopefully maybe even ultimately lead to a diplomatic end to that conflict there. That's what you'd like to see. But also, ISIS-K is a real threat, and I think it needs to be addressed. I think it shouldn't just be the U.S., and I think that, I mean, let's be clear, one of the reasons they targeted Russia is because Russia has targeted these terror groups in Syria, and that's one of the reasons that they targeted them. So I think that if we could have some kind of a coalition, an international coalition, and label ISIS-K a global threat and go after them, and try and destroy their capabilities, I think that would be sort of a bridge maybe diplomatically with Russia and the West right now. Probably the best thing we have to hang our hat on at this time. But what we're looking at now is Russia just launched this really robust missile attack in Ukraine. Now Ukraine did the same thing, retaliated, and they hit two of their ships. So you're looking at it, so this could obviously escalate, especially if we let that narrative fly that Ukraine was behind this, which there's no evidence to show that. They're saying that they captured these people fleeing towards Ukraine. And I think Russia, again, with their history of false flag operations, would love to pin this on them and make them the bad guy and use it as a justification to escalate this. I think right now it's important for the rest of the international community to condemn that.
That's an excellent point, and it would be who? Many to kind of put aside differences and come together and fight this evil, because this evil will permeate. Unfortunately, they did something like this. It could be anywhere. So that's an excellent point, and we shall see there. But all in all, just a horrific scene over there at that concert with 137, again, dead, confirmed. Three of those children. The captain with us. With the Global Threat Report, let's head over to Gaza, Captain, where Israel has agreed to a U.S. proposal on a prisoner-hostage exchange and now awaiting response from Hamas. What does this deal include, my friend?
So I'll just start by saying at face value, Jay, this is a bad deal for Israel. But I'm talking about on paper, and there's a lot of emotion involved in these decisions right now because there's families and there's human beings being held. So I understand. I understand the pressure that they have, the emotional pressure they have from the Israeli people to try and make a deal. But what we're looking at is the release of around 700 Palestinian prisoners, and Jay, many of them, 100 of them specifically, serving life sentences for killing Israeli nationals. And they're releasing these 700 prisoners in exchange for only 40 of the remaining 100 hostages, the remaining living hostages of about 100, for only 40 of them, they're going to exchange these 700 prisoners. So anyone who looks at this in a negotiation would say this is a little lopsided, but there's a history behind this, right? And it comes down to, Jay, that the Israeli people, like Americans, we value human life. And it's important for them to try and get these people home if they can save their lives. So that's why they're working on this negotiation right now. It has not yet been confirmed that Hamas has agreed to this. One thing I'd say is this is not tied directly to a ceasefire. This is merely a hostage exchange and prisoner exchange, not necessarily tied to any type of a ceasefire. That is another issue that's being discussed right now, where there's another proposal. As you know, China and Russia had vetoed the last proposal by the U.S. to have a ceasefire, and that is what they're looking at right now. They're putting forward a new resolution, and we'll see how far that goes. The Russia and China resolution that they're supporting would have an immediate ceasefire in Gaza during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which ends on April 9th. So the U.S. has warned already, Jay, though, that this new resolution, which is backed by Russia and China, could hurt the ceasefire negotiations. So this is in direct opposition to what the U.S. is trying to achieve right now. I don't see any of these U.N. resolutions anytime soon being successful and having any impact on this conflict. Now, we have had our vice president, Kamala Harris, has kind of warned that there'd be repercussions to Israel if they were to move into Rafah. And now Israel is sending people to negotiate or to discuss these issues with the U.S. government right now. And that's kind of where we stand. There's been no progress on a ceasefire negotiation.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, and you know how I stand. I think it's a terrible deal. You know, you're giving 700 Palestinian prisoners, 100 of them, folks, serving life sentences for killing Israeli nationals in exchange for the release of 40 Israeli hostages held by Hamas in Gaza. First off, 40. You know, we thought it was 130. Now, listen, we don't know how many are alive still. We don't know how many Americans are included in that 40, Captain. I don't like the deal at all. It's very hazy. You can't trust Hamas, obviously. This is a terrorist group, folks. The administration is doing this for, in my opinion, appeasement purposes, because it is an election year. And that's what's going on right now. It's a terrible deal. It really is. It's actually an embarrassment in my estimation. It makes us look weak. There is no question about it. I think if we had strength in the White House, we wouldn't even be at this point in time. I'll say that. I think Hamas would have been taken care of in an appropriate manner. But we don't have strength. We have weakness. And when we have weakness, we have appeasement. And that is what's going on right now. So I'm in full agreement there. It's a terrible deal. Netanyahu stated very definitively that the mission is the mission, and that is to eradicate Hamas. And that's what's going on. And, of course, the operation in Rafah, where more than 1 million Palestinians are sheltering from the bombardment and everything else, we understand that, but it is not a good deal at all. Yeah. The captain with us, the Global Threat Report. Yeah, go ahead, Cap.
I was going to say, Jay, you know, they love to talk about the 1 million people that have fled and they're in Rafah now, and they're warning Israel about moving in and conducting military operations there because of these people and the humanitarian crisis. But they forget that Hamas also has fled to Rafah. They're not stupid. And that's where they are right now. And these really robust attempts by the U.S. government to keep Israel from going in there is only aiding Hamas right now, the same way that a lot of these food drops have been supporting Hamas, because they're the ones who are getting a lot of these supplies right now. And Israel has to make tough decisions, but historically they've made those tough decisions. They're not going to fold easily. The prisoner exchange is a very different thing than going after Hamas and Rafah. Because, you know, again, Jay, me and you agree on this. That's a bad deal. It's a bad deal for everyone unless you're a family member of a hostage. Those people think it's a good deal because they just want, they're just clinging to some hope they're going to they're gonna see their family members again. And I understand those emotions. That's why these rules we've had historically for to not negotiate with terrorists, they're hard. They're hard decisions to make, but I think necessary because we're only... we're only inspiring them to launch more attacks and take more prisoners if this is successful. And so far, let me tell you, taking these hostages was the best thing Hamas ever did because they have used it as a bargaining chip, a powerful bargaining chip. Look, we're still talking about it right now. And like you said, this is a terrorist group. We're negotiating with a terrorist group. So it's a tough situation. As far as Rafah, I can't imagine leaving that entire region untouched by Israeli military operations to target Hamas, because Prime Minister Netanyahu's pledge to destroy Hamas will not have been met unless he roots out those Hamas fighters down there.
Yep, no doubt about it. No question. Captain with us, the Global Threat Report. Finally, in the hours ahead, the former president, Cap, facing a deadline to secure a $464 million bond for the civil fraud judgment against him. There is a lot of back and forth on this about whether to seize property and appeal. Craig Ferrantino just gave you an excellent point regarding if the state loses the appeal, they're going to have to, you know, come up with another 9% here. In essence, there is a lot on the line, and the question is, what is this next move? Do you have any idea, Cap?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously the Trump legal team is trying to the very last minute, they're trying to appeal this decision for him to not have more time. Either, first of all, to secure a bond, which is historic. You know, think about what they're asking. You see a lot of people discussing this issue, and they're saying, well, look, Trump can't even get a bond. It's a $500 million. These people... These bond companies, Jay, they've never even heard of anything like this. They don't even understand. They're laughing when they get the request, right? So it takes time, obviously. But I think that somebody brought up a great point yesterday. There's a lot of talk, discussion about this topic, and I saw Kat Kim on Fox News. She said that, you know, Democrats specifically in the left, they love to use the line that nobody's above the law, but it seems that everyone but Trump has been above this law because no one's ever been charged with this, ever. This is a concoction of laws and aggressive prosecution by Letitia James. And this is something that's never been done. We don't even have a victim. You don't have a complainant. The people, the banks that gave these loans and financed these deals actually testified on Trump's behalf, saying not only did he paid it early. And when you look, really get into the meat and potatoes of what they're saying, that he overvalued property, and they said that Mar-a-Lago was worth $18 million, meaning the state. That's why they're claiming that he overvalued it. Meanwhile, the people of the real estate industry and the experts in Miami, they're saying, you know, some people say, Jay, that that property would be closer to $1 billion than $18 million. I mean, it's wildly undervalued, according to the state. So, if, when you look at it like that, it's amazing that this case has gone this far. But again, when you get to a city like New York City, you can indict Donald Trump for anything. You know, evidence not needed. You know, and I think that's what we're looking at right now. And the scary thing with this is, I think ultimately he's going to survive this. I think that he can come up with the money. Might it hurt his campaign right now? Sure, that's their strategy right now, is to you know, wound him in a critical time during the presidential election cycle. And I think ultimately this might be appealed successfully, but right now that doesn't do him any good. It doesn't do his campaign any good. So I think that's where we stand. Do I think he's going to have a solution by the end of the day? Probably not. But I think ultimately he could come up with the funds if needed.
You know, Cap, you've known me a while, and I always kind of stress objectivity. And to the naked eye, man, I'll tell you, if you're trying to be that way and you look all that's happening with the Biden family and what's going on with Hunter and all these payoffs, and then you switch to the impeachment inquiry and the DOJ and the documents and the garage and the Corvette, and then you see a montage of the New York Attorney General from, what, 5-6 years ago. I mean, this was her MO, was to go after the former president and make a statement. I mean, this is what it's all about. You know, the same individual went after the NRA. She's trying to make headlines. That's all there is to it. Unfortunately, you can't think any other way. And thus, where we are at today. So, a very interesting day indeed on all fronts. And I know you'll be monitoring it, Cap, and we'll have you on this week as well to see some outcomes here.
Excellent, Jay. I look forward to it.